Today we are pushing pause on this series that we have been in for the last several months on the New Testament book of Acts and doing a Christmas series that I've entitled A Child is Born. If you were in here for the welcome earlier, you heard Pastor Clint talking about our focus during the month of December is to support this organization called Caring Solutions, a ministry in town that supports single females and couples who find themselves struggling with an unplanned pregnancy. They support them physically, they support them emotionally, they support them spiritually during a very confusing time. And one of the things that I've heard is that sometimes a single or a couple will come in and they'll say something like this: it's not that we don't want a child, it's just that the timing is bad. Right now is not a good time. It's just not the right time in life. We had not planned on this. If it was later, it would be fine. If it was after we finished college or after I got a job or after I had settled down into a house, then that would be fine. But right now, the timing is bad. We had not planned on this happening. That's certainly understandable. Sometimes these things happen and they're just not planned. I remember it was about 8 years ago on a Saturday morning. I was in my home office working on the sermon for the next day. I heard our then 7-month-old daughter, Elizabeth, our only child, crying. She was upstairs early in the morning. She had gotten up. She started crying for one of us to come get her. I was working on my sermon, so I figured that Katie would go and get her up, change her, bring her downstairs. Daughter kept crying, didn't know where Katie was. So I yelled out for her, "Hey, can you get Elizabeth?" No response. So finally, sort of frustrated, I got up, went upstairs, got my daughter out of her crib, laid her on the changing table to change her, and about that moment, Katie came walking in the room. And my first thought was, well, you know, where have you been? Been working on a sermon, need a little help here. Where have you been? Didn't you hear our daughter crying? Didn't you hear me calling out for you? Where in the world have you been? But before I could say a word, she leaned over the changing table and looked at our 7-month-old daughter and said, "Congratulations, Elizabeth, you're going to be a big sister." Now you talk about a showstopper. I remember I just put the new diaper on her. I had attached one side but not the other, and I froze in place. Have you ever felt hot and cold at the exact same time? I mean, that was the feeling. My heart stopped beating. You know, my stomach dropped straight to my feet. My kidneys and liver started shutting down. I mean, everything was going black. I mean, sometimes these things happen and they're just not planned. If you're familiar at all with the Christmas story, you know that it centers around an unplanned pregnancy. Everything about that story from an earthly human level screamed bad timing. I mean, the first issue was this couple, they weren't married. Bad timing issue number one. Had it happened just a year later, it would have been fine. They would have been excited. They would have celebrated. But now, during this time, not being married, they were concerned. What do we do? This is not right. This is not the time that we had planned. They didn't have a house to live in. Bad timing issue number two. I mean, the soon-to-be husband, he was working on a place for them to live. He had gone to make sure that they had the right accommodations so that one day they could have a child, but at this point, that wasn't ready, and they weren't sure. Where do we live? There was this big question mark about who the father was because they were not married and had not been together yet, and so there was, you know, a big issue there. A year later, there wouldn't have been the question mark, but at this point, you know, we're not sure. And to top everything off, the Roman emperor had ordered this census, basically a way to tax everyone in the Roman Empire. And the way the census worked was everyone had to return to the place of their birth, to their hometown, to where their families came from. And so the whole world just seemed at that point to be chaotic. I mean, it was like going to the Atlanta airport on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. It was just kind of mass chaos. It was not a great time to travel, and it was certainly not a good time for a pregnant lady to travel. Everything about it seemed to be, from an earthly point of view, bad timing. But from heaven's perspective, it was God's perfect time. And that's exactly what we're going to read this morning. I'm going to read two verses from Galatians chapter 4, just two verses this morning. Galatians was a letter that was written by a guy named Paul to a church in a region called Galatia. And in this letter, he talks about the Christmas story. In Galatians 4, beginning in verse 4, here's what Paul wrote. But when the set time had fully come, God sent His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those under the law, that we might receive the full rights of sons, or the full adoption to sonship. In this very short statement, this one sentence, we see four very powerful, incredible truths. That's what I want us to zero in on this morning. The first is this. Paul wrote, when the set time had fully come. Meaning when God's perfect planned time had come, God sent His Son. God at that point pushed go on this plan that had been set from the beginning of time. When it arrived, when this set time came, God sent His Son. Now again, from Earth's vantage point, it did not seem like the perfect time. From an earthly point of view, it seemed late. It seemed like this was something God should have done a long time before. Going back centuries, 2,000 years before Christ, God made a promise to this man, Abraham, that one of his descendants would be the Messiah, the one who would come and set this broken world right, the one who would come and redeem humanity from the brokenness of this world. And yet, generations went by, centuries went by, eventually a couple of millennia went by, and this Messiah had not come. I mean, they would prophesy about Him. The nation of Israel waited on Him. They would talk about the Messiah, that one day He would come, but year after year, decade after decade, century after century, and no Messiah. Have you ever wondered why? Why did God wait so long to send Jesus? I've thought about that. I thought, why wasn't it maybe just a generation or two after Abraham? Why didn't Jesus come then at that point? Man, it would have made sense. It would have been the Messiah coming, and Israel could have all embraced the Messiah. Why didn't Jesus come earlier? When you look at it, though, when you look at it from the perspective of the history of the world, it makes perfect sense. And here's why. Jesus did not come just as the Messiah for Israel. Jesus came as the Messiah for the world. And had Jesus come earlier, that would not have been the case. He would have come as the Redeemer of Israel. But because Jesus came when He did, this message we call the gospel was able to spread to the entire world. There are a couple of factors to look at. One was this. When Jesus came into the world, for the first time in the history of the world, there was a common written language. People still spoke in their local native tongues, but as far as writing was concerned, Greek was the common language. When you read the New Testament, the 27 books of the New Testament, every book in the New Testament was written in Greek, because all of those that these letters were written to understood how to read Greek. And so you had a church in Jerusalem, and letters were written to the church in Jerusalem in Greek. You had a church in the city of Rome, 1,500 miles or more away, depending on how you traveled, written also in Greek. Even though they came from different cultures and different backgrounds and different nations, they could all understand Greek. And so when guys would write these incredible truths to churches far away, they were able to understand the language. Had Jesus come just a few hundred years earlier, this would not have been possible. Here's the second reason. The Roman Empire, when Jesus came, was at its zenith. The Roman Empire stretched all the way from what we today call Great Britain, all the way down to northern Africa. Had this huge territory. And the Romans were very good at securing their territories. Meaning for the first time, they instituted laws in the Roman Empire so that when someone was traveling from one place to another, there would be the protection of soldiers. There would be laws in place. And you still had bandits, you still had robbers. But if those individuals were caught, they would be subject to Roman prosecution. Meaning, it was much safer to travel. Now, just a few centuries before, this was not the case. I mean, it was, you know, just kind of everybody did what was right in their own eyes, and if you were traveling somewhere and someone wanted to rob you, they would just rob you, and there was no one that could really do anything about it. I mean, we take this for granted today. I mean, this is still true in many parts of the world. We take it for granted. If you get in your car today and you decide that you're going to drive to Florida, you really don't have to worry that you're going to get caught in between some warring tribes, between a tribe from Valdosta and a tribe from Jacksonville. You know, hopefully not. You know, we take it for granted. In the Roman Empire, for the very first time, they had security and safety in travel. Now, if you've been with us for our series in Acts, you know that this message called the gospel begins to spread outside of Jerusalem very quickly. Eventually, within about just 100 years after Jesus died, the gospel message had spread to virtually the entire Roman Empire. I mean, what was essentially the known world at the time. Everyone got to hear the gospel message. Everyone got to hear that God sent His Son to die for you. You're not Jewish, doesn't matter. You're not part of the nation of Israel, that's okay. God loves the world and sent His Son to die for you. That message, because of when Jesus came, was able to spread throughout the entire world. Had Jesus come just a few hundred years earlier, that would not have been possible. From an earthly point of view, it seemed late. But from heaven's perspective, it was the perfect time. Here's the second thing that Paul wrote. He wrote, when the set time had come, God sent His Son born of a woman. That is a powerful statement. That meant that Jesus came to earth and fully subjected Himself to the human condition. For the very first time in His entire eternal existence, Jesus left the perfection of heaven and experienced the brokenness of our world. Meaning that when Jesus was sick, He felt bad. When He fell and cut His knee, it bled and it hurt. He felt pain. He felt emotional anguish. He experienced the brokenness of our world. I mean, when we read the Christmas story, we tend to romanticize it. We tend to forget that there were stables that were smelly and dirty, and the manger was hard, and the place was loud. We tend to romanticize the whole thing, right? We sing this song, "Silent Night, Holy Night, All is Calm, All is Bright." Have you ever been in a room where a delivery was taking place? Was it calm? Have you ever been in a stable? Was it calm? Combine those two. Jesus came into a messy, broken world. We don't do this with any other part of the Bible like we do with the Christmas story. And here's why I think we do it. I think we romanticize the Christmas story because we want our own Christmas experiences to be that way, right? We want the Norman Rockwell Christmas experience. I mean, I'll confess to you, I'm that way. I've got this Clark Griswold syndrome inside me. And I want the whole thing to be absolutely perfect, to go off without a hitch. Now, I remember several years ago, our daughter was 4 and our son was 3. I told you earlier about the surprise. Daughter was 4, our son was 3. That Christmas Eve, as we were putting them to bed, we said, "Okay, you need to understand, you cannot go downstairs in the morning until you get us up. No going downstairs on your own. You have to get us up first." So the next morning at 4 a.m., they came into our room. "Hey, you know, Mom, Dad, it's Christmas. Get up, get up, get up." We said, "All right, you cannot go downstairs yet." And as we had planned, we sent them into one of their rooms. I went downstairs, turned on all the lights so the pictures would be perfect, made sure the presents were all arranged exactly right so everything would be perfect, came back upstairs, gave Katie the thumbs up. You know, we're ready to go. And as we had planned, we said, "We need you two to sit on the bed. Before we go downstairs, we're going to read the Christmas story from Luke chapter 2. So I started feeling guilty about all the presents and the commercialization. You know, so the night before, we said, "We're going to read the Christmas story and we're going to pray so they'll understand the meaning of Christmas, right? We'll get finished. You know, and then they'll look at me and say, 'Oh, Father, that was wonderful.'" I'm not sure why I thought they would speak in a British accent, but yeah, I just thought it would be proper, you know. "Father, let us pray now." You know. And so we sat them there, and I started to read from Luke chapter 2, and I really did. I thought it would be like Linus from the Peanuts reading the Christmas story, you know, and the spotlight coming down, and, you know, and they would just be just enthralled with every word. And so I started off. "In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that all the world should be taxed." Now, our daughter, who was 4 at the time, was old enough to understand that we had said, "You've got to sit and you've got to listen," but at the end of this, there were presents waiting. And she had developed enough patience and understanding to know, "Hey, this may not be my favorite thing to do, but I've got to just sit still right now. I've got to show a little patience." My son at 3, not so much. And I could tell he was not happy with the whole deal. And he's kind of squirming around. And by the time I had the shepherds out in the field at night, I could see his eyes were getting big and his little ears were turning red. And he was just not happy having to sit there and listen to this story. And so about the moment that the angels were proclaiming glory to God in the highest, he had had enough. And he just exploded and said, "I get it. Jesus, 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 I'm just ready to open my presents." Needless to say, It was not what I had planned. We tend to romanticize the whole thing, and we forget that Jesus came and entered fully into the human condition, experienced everything you and I experience, except for sin, except for committing sin. He experienced it all. There is no other religion in the world that teaches that God came in human form. It doesn't make sense. Why would God come? Why would God leave perfection and come to earth and willingly subject himself to all the pain and heartache and brokenness of our world? Here's why, and this is the next phrase. Paul wrote this, that Jesus came, born under the law, to redeem those under the law. This is a powerful phrase, that Jesus, the Son of God, came at the set time, born of a woman, subjecting himself to the human condition, and under the law, under the moral and ceremonial law of God, under the very law he gave, he subjected himself to that law. When you read the Old Testament, and you read through especially books like Leviticus, and you see all of these laws that seem so strange about clean foods and unclean foods, about washing of the hands, about sacrifices at various times, and you read these laws and you think, why were all of these laws given? All of these laws, these ceremonial laws, were given to show the nation of Israel the character of God, his perfection and his holiness. And so Jesus came and subjected himself to the ceremonial law, meaning he kept every one of those laws perfectly. Jesus also subjected himself to the moral law. So when you read through the Old Testament, you see the moral law. Think of the Ten Commandments. Do not lie. Do not covet. Do not commit murder. Jesus perfectly kept both the moral law and the ceremonial law that we read about in the Old Testament. Why were all of these given? So that the people of Israel could understand that God is absolutely holy, that he is perfect, that there is nothing in God that even hints of any kind of sin, and that we cannot approach God in our own goodness. We cannot approach God in our own righteousness. All the laws were given to point the nation of Israel to the fact that this day had to come where God sent a Messiah to make it right, that on our own, we cannot make it right. Now, this is one of these deals that in our culture today, we just do not see. Now, our society says that basically, God is just a little bit better than us. Like a kindly old grandfather, you know, who is good. And that we are born basically good, and that, you know, environment corrupts us, but with a little bit of religion, a little bit of moral training, we can be corrected, and therefore we can have access to God. You know, or what is taught is that, you know, if you can just be religious enough and do enough religious things that you can have access to God, or that God at the end of the day looks at your life and says, well, you know, boys will be boys. You know, you messed up a few times, but I get it. It wasn't that bad. You didn't do too many things that were bad. You know, you're fine. Come on in. And see, all the laws of the Old Testament were given to show us that God is so holy that we on our own, in our goodness, cannot be in his presence. Several years ago, Katie and I decided to do a little getaway. We had two small babies at home, and life had just gotten kind of chaotic, and our conversations had just degenerated to running the house. You know, what time do we have to be where? And there's a baby crying, another baby crying. You know, what do we do? And we said, we've got to get away. And so I started doing some research of some places we could go that were cheap, fun getaways. You know, what can I do? And so I'll go ahead and confess to you the best deal I found for a 5-star hotel, including flight and several shows, was in Las Vegas. At the time, I wouldn't tell you that that's where I was going, but you know, I've talked to enough of you that have gone yourselves, and so you know, I figure, hey, I can share it. You know, you've said you've gone to see a concert or gone to some show, and it really was a phenomenal deal. I mean, for the price that you'd stay in a 2-star hotel somewhere else, it's 5-star. You know, it's a great thing. So we decided to go, and we went out there and had a great time. Great meals, walked around, looked at all these massive hotels. Saw a couple of shows, you know, didn't have to deal with screaming babies for, you know, a few days. I mean, it was great. Had a great time. But while we were there, we saw why people give you the crooked eye when you tell them that you went to Las Vegas. And it's because there is this dark underbelly of that city that is not hidden at all. I mean, they advertise it on billboards or on flyers. And as we walked through the city, we saw some things that were just heartbreaking. I mean, first of all, you'd walk through these hotels and you would see a casino and there would be people in there with just these sad faces, you know, because they were spending all of this money and they were going to go home broke. We would see billboards everywhere that would say, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's like their motto. And I would think, yeah, right, you know, what happens in Vegas could stay with you the rest of your life, you know. Or, you know, what they could say is what's spent in Vegas on the slot machine stays in Vegas. You know, that would have been far more appropriate. But I mean, there were advertisements for these awful shows and services. I mean, you can just imagine. I mean, it's the lowest of lows when it comes to sin. So imagine for just a moment that you went to Las Vegas and you went to some place where all the bad stuff was happening. I mean, it was awful. And imagine you went, but you did not go alone. You took with you your grandmother. Whether she's alive or not, you took with you your grandmother. And imagine for just a moment that your grandmother was an absolute saint. That, I mean, like the worst thing she ever did was order an extra dessert at dinner. Like that was it. I mean, never drank, you know, never smoked, never cussed. You know, she was perfect. When you sat at your grandmother's table, you would not even burp because you were scared that, you know, it would insult her so badly that she was that perfect and pure. And imagine you went into one of these places with her and it was just sin everywhere. I mean, just gross, awful debauchery. If you were with your grandmother, what would you think? Oh no, my grandmother's seeing this. Think about how offended Grandma is right now. Poor Nana, shield your eyes, you know. Imagine that scenario. That does not begin to compare at how a holy God is offended by our sin. God sent His Son into the world, born under this holy law, to keep the law perfectly so that He could then die on the cross to redeem us from the judgment of the law and to make it so that God can be in our presence. That God's holiness is satisfied. Here's what that means. Here's the last thing. Here is the icing on the cake. Here's the creme de la creme of this passage. Jesus did all of this that we might receive adoption to sonship. Some translations there say that we might receive the rights of sonship. Jesus came and died on the cross, lived the perfect life to redeem us so that in Christ you get adoption to sonship. I mean, this is a powerful statement. Most of you know this past summer we adopted 2 children into our home. When we adopted our first child, we were in court and there was a couple in front of us. They were adopting a 10-year-old boy. The 10-year-old was the biological son of the wife. And so technically it was not her adopting. It was the husband. For whatever reason, the biological father had either died or was out of the picture. And so her husband was adopting this 10-year-old. They stood before the judge, and the husband had to answer a bunch of legal questions. And then he had him, you know, raise his hand and do some kind of oath. And the judge said, "Then I'm granting this adoption." And he looked at the father and said, "He is now legally your son, just as if you had had him biologically." You didn't get it. The judge did, because he stopped and said, "Well, wait a second. I don't mean you had him biologically. If you had done that, you could take that show on the road. You know, I mean as if he were your biological son. You have the same rights. He is now legally your son, just as if he were your biological son." They said the same thing to us, both adoptions. When we finished, they said, "Just like your biological children have certain rights, they have the same rights." Heaven forbid one day there's some kind of issue between siblings over the will. Our adopted children have the exact same rights as our biological children. Now I want you to let that sink in for just a minute in terms of we might receive adoption to sonship. That means that you and I have an inheritance that is waiting on us, the same inheritance that Jesus Christ got when he went to heaven. We get this incredible inheritance waiting on us, so that a holy God looks at us when we enter heaven and says, "Welcome, my son. Welcome, my daughter. You get it all. Here it is for you." "Well, God, I don't deserve this. God, look at all the things that I've done in my life. Look at how many times I've broken your law. I do not deserve this." I know. Jesus did it for you. "That's why I sent my son into the world, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem you under the law. So now, here you go. It's yours. You get it. The rights of sonship." That's the Christmas message. That's why God sent his son into the world.